All right, just say your name and your title.
I'm Michael Whitmore. I'm the director of the Folger Shakespeare Library.
And we're here. This is a really exciting day because, well, we're getting a sneak peek, but this Friday there will be a ribbon cutting of a bunch of renovations. So how long in the making are these renovations?
We first dreamed this project up 11 years ago when we did our strategic plan. And about 7 years ago, we started to design this renovation, which will open up our building finally in a welcoming and beautiful way and extend an invitation to everyone to come in and enjoy the things that we have.
Awesome. Now, because I'm going to write an article with this, what are some, like, are there any, like, stats and facts and figures, even if it's ballpark numbers on, you know,
sure,
how many million-dollar renovation? What do you know what I mean?
So it was an $81.5 million renovation that created a new 12,000-square-foot pavilion that is inserted under our historic building. It created beautiful public gardens, and it was designed to allow us to display our most valuable artifacts and to welcome people to a destination.
So the renovation, you said, is a giant new state-of-the-art pavilion underneath the historic space above it.
That is correct. We had to hold up the historic Paul Cray building. Paul Cray was the architect of the building that was designed and opened in 1932. But 90 years later, we needed to add this public space in a way that complemented the historic building. So we had to hold the building up temporarily while we demolished the foundations underneath, poured newer and deeper ones, and then inserted this new public pavilion that includes over 5,000 square feet of gallery space for us to engage the public.
Wow, that sounds way trickier than just some, you know, construction crew building a brand new exhibit. You had to hold the old one up and make sure, you know, it didn't collapse while you built under it. That's incredible.
There was actually a robot on that corner that was constantly pointing a laser at little crystal targets on the building to make sure that the building did not move a millimeter when we were doing this project.
Awesome. Now, I want to get into all of the details of the brand new space you designed underneath, but real quick, for maybe some newcomers to the area, remind us what all was housed and stored in the old place above it, that this thing you had to make sure didn't fall.
Sure. So the Folger Shakespeare Library was created in 1932 as a living memorial to William Shakespeare. It houses a collection that is now 22,000 linear feet long. That's a giant shelf that covers not just Shakespeare, but Northern European and Atlantic history from roughly 1530 to 1700.
Wow. And so in addition to all of that great, you know, treasure trove of historical documents and Shakespeare, you know, plays and everything. There was also we've covered stuff at the Folger Theater too, right? Was that also on the above ground portion?
It is in the above ground portion, but we did need to modernize the HVAC for that theater so that our patrons and our actors can be comfortable. And the investment in all the public facing areas of this building was immense, and it was overdue. We also improve spaces for our staff and researchers, so every piece of the Folger mission can come together in this new building.
Okay, great. All right, so thanks for giving us the background on, you know, the existing structure above. Now, let's do a deep dive into, pun not intended, of the deep dive underneath of everything you renovated underneath. So what all is down in this brand new exciting space that we're about to go look at?
Well, you're going to first be greeted by these beautiful gardens that create two almost meadow-like spaces on each side of our building.
Are we talking this one right here?
That one right there. Look at that beautiful garden with a poem by former poet laureate Rita Dove that welcomes you and tells you, leave the official world behind. You're coming to a new place. Come down the garden path and enter a forest of books. And so as you come into the new pavilion, you're greeted by two new exhibition halls, which contain fabulous, fabulous rare books and manuscripts, but also interactive exhibits, opportunities for you to try your hand at printing. And in an age of digital media, this seems like archaeology, but it's really fun to appreciate how someone would create by hand a 900-page book like Shakespeare's First Folio, which is the only source for 18 of Shakespeare's plays printed in 1623.
Wow. What are some of those 18 plays that we might, name check some we might know?
Maybe Macbeth.
You may have heard of it.
Twelfth Night, The Winter's Tale. These were plays that were not printed in the smaller format, the kind of cheaper paperback version called the quarto version. Folios were more expensive books, more dramatic books, and to have plays only in a folio was a big statement in and of itself, because that format, that larger size, more prestigious, larger book was reserved for things like law and history.
Yeah, and so we're allowed to say the name Macbeth here because we're not putting on the show. It's
hey,
only
not,
bad luck if you're
on the Scottish
show.
Play is only needed inside, and you know, Shakespeare wrote that for James, the then King of England. And we actually have James's handwritten manuscript corrections on a treatise that he wrote about witchcraft.
Really?
So it's interesting. When we perform plays here at the Folger, we're actually just yards away from some of the sources that were used or documents that connect us to the people who put pressure on these plays or who were spectators or actors.
That's wild. And so these are all originals, or are they like replica first edition but they made several? I guess my question is why are they here in America, in the United, in DC versus over there?
Well, they were collected by Henry and Emily Folger, who were Shakespeare lovers, but their interest gradually grew to all aspects of the Tudor Stuart period. They are original books and manuscripts. So if you think about Shakespeare's plays, we have no scripts written in his hand. Actually, we have almost no scripts from any playwright's hand in the period.
Of that time,
What happened was the plays were memorized by companies and guarded jealously so that no one else could take your play and start making money with it. But they were licensed to printers who would print the first edition. And so many of the first editions of Shakespeare's plays are here in Washington, as well as handwritten manuscripts by folks who were reacting to the plays or people who were part of that culture. And the reason why it's here in Washington is the Folgers chose to put their collection here in a building that contains a theater, an exhibition hall, and a research library, because they thought all of those things would be important for a city that represents the power of words.
Are the Folgers Washingtonians, or are they from a different, like, why pick just because it's the nation's capital?
Wait.
Thank you. You're a pro. Wait for the car to go by.
So the Folgers lived in Brooklyn. Henry Folger was president of Standard Oil. He worked for Mr. Rockefeller. He was collecting throughout his career then. He did not have he and Emily did not have children, but they both had a passion for Shakespeare. So they were creating that collection in Brooklyn and looking for where to put it. They spotted this land next to the Library of Congress and the future Supreme Court. They drew up plans and were about to start building when they discovered that the Congress was about to nationalize this plot for the Adams Building of the Library of Congress. Mr. Folger quickly called the Librarian of Congress and said, I have a collection of inestimable value that I want to make available to Washington and the nation. Would you help me stop this legislation? And so it was actually an act of Congress that preserved this plot so that the Folgers could create their rare book and manuscript library, as well as the first permanent Elizabethan theater in the United States.
I love all that background. That's great. I didn't know it was around, like, predated even that they were, like, built, about to build the Supreme Court building.
So
that's so wild.
Early plans for the Folger, there's if you look at the kind of map of this area, there's the Folger, and then there's a empty plot of land with the right with the label future Supreme Court.
Wow, that's wild to me. Well, I'm about to go in and see some specific examples, but just in case, name another one or two of specific things that folks can come see in there.
Sure.
You mentioned Shakespeare's First Folio. So, what about any other Shakespeare, even if it's non-Shakespeare?
Yeah, no, we would love for people to enjoy the First Folios. There's nowhere you can see 82 of them.
Yeah.
But there's also wonderful items here. There's the what we would now call a deed or a title to Shakespeare's house in Stratford-upon-Avon. It's a document that he would have held in his hands. There are records of rare performances, one of them in I believe, the Antarctic Circle.
What?
So we've got a whole range of items, including a new work by the contemporary artist Fred Wilson, who's created a gorgeous black mirror that reflects the face of Elizabeth I from our famous Siv portrait of Elizabeth.
Awesome. Well, before I go in there and start filming some things, any other highlights that we might have left out? I mean, I'm sure there's a million different things.
Oh, well I think visitors will enjoy a night at our theater. There'll also be a new cafe called Quill and Crumb opening soon that will provide nibbles, snacks, sandwiches, and drinks throughout the day. So this is a place where you can come, spend some time, talk with friends, bring your family, because these exhibitions are designed to engage learners and Shakespeare soon-to-be lovers of all ages.
Do you think, and obviously there's no way of knowing because literally the ribbon cutting hasn't even happened yet, but right. Do you guys have any projections on how much of a boost in foot traffic this will cause? Well, I guess I should ask, how many typically would come in a usual year versus what do you think this renovation might help do?
Well, we used to get around 60,000 visits a year. Our neighbors at the Library of Congress and the Capitol Visitor Centers get many millions, so we believe that we've got the ability to attract many, many more people, hundreds of thousands of people every year.
That's great. So Quill and Crumb, and what else? Oh, and what about the Shakespeare, the Folger Theater? I see you're doing the name of the play is actually kind of fitting, right?
Well, the Metamorphosis, which is an adaptation of a play by Ovid, a classical Roman writer, is being performed right now with an all-black cast, and it's a fascinating production of a Mary Zimmerman contemporary play that reflects on the African diaspora. And one of the things I think it's so important about this play is Shakespeare becomes universal when people treat him specifically, when they take a specific set of experiences, in this context, the black experience. And it's true of all classical writers. And this play brilliantly resets in this poetic and inventive and really inclusive way these very old stories, myths about foundations and creations.
I love it. I talked to the right person because you can speak to the theater, to everything. So thank you. Very well versed.
Let me say one more thing.
Yeah.
Scholars have been using this collection for decades, and we've invested in those spaces where they can use these rare materials, and we've expanded our storage spaces so that we can continue to collect and keep all of our material on site, which scholars love.
Love it. Final seconds. Another question popped in my head. Since we're situated so close to the Capitol, White House just down the road, are there any good historical anecdotes of like this president or this Supreme Court justice or this senator popped in here and read this Shakespeare work?
Alan Simpson used to have a reader's card. Senator Simpson liked to hide from certain votes in the Capitol, so he thought the Folger reading room was ideal. I had the opportunity to meet Justice Ginsburg many times. She invited me to her chambers to talk about the legal issues in The Merchant of Venice because she was judging a retrial of Shylock in 2016. That was very exciting.
Oh, the thing over at Shakespeare Theater where they do like a mock trial?
No, or you mean like that, but it was actually in London Venice ghetto. It was, and Justice Breyer was part of that too.
I see.
I would say my favorite story was when Chief Justice Roberts came to, with his staff and security, to look at our law exhibition. They enjoyed that. And I did offer the opportunity to walk directly from the exhibition hall into the reading room where scholars are reading very old books and manuscripts. And I thought he would say no, but he said yes. So a troop of about 12 people, some of them heavily armed, walked into this silent reading room. 30 researchers in the room, not a single person looked up.
Wow.
And it was one of my proudest moments as director, because as I said to Chief Justice Roberts, these people are using their imaginations to recreate a world that is 400 years old, and we do not matter to them.
I love it. See, all the biggest dignitaries are inspired, down to just you and me, regular folks who will come and enjoy seeing all of them.
Roll right in.
Roll right in. Well, let's roll in. Let's look at some of the stuff. So
Sounds
thank you
good.
So much.
You're welcome.